16 years ago, next month, there was a Chronicles of Narnia Prince Caspian movie. But guess which version of the story that Narnia steward Douglas Gresham praised as a potentially better adaptation of C.S. Lewis's book? This is the Academy of Arts Logos Theater's Prince Caspian, now performing through April, end of the month, at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. And today, we invite one Logos artisan into our studio to explore performance and puppetry for Christ's glory.
Speculative fiction, like no other genre, reflects the creativity of God.
If you look at the scriptures, you're going to have to see that God uses imagination more than rational discourse.
We are supposed to be image bearers for a vastly creative God.
Reading fantastical fiction opened a portal in my imagination for a place other than just a materialistic world.
I experienced the gospel story with the mind of someone who loved adventure and loved the idea of light conquering darkness.
We're wired for stories that reflect how we see the world in ways that are true.
The story is either pointing to Christ or it's pointing to our need for Christ.
Welcome on stage to Fantastical Truth, the podcast from lorehaven.com, in which we explore fantastical stories for God's glory. I'm E. Stever Burnett, the publisher of Lorehaven, co-author of The Pop Culture Parent and some other books, and I am not trying to sell you a screenplay.
And I'm Zachary Russell, and even though I'm the co-host here, I do not like being in the spotlight. I would rather much be behind the scenes, but this is episode 208. How does the Logos Theater adapt Narnia for the stage?
Zach, sometimes I feel even more comfortable talking about folks who make plays, who make stage performances, who make movies, because unlike some of my good friends, I have no aspirations to write screenplays or stage plays. In fact, at one conference whose identity I will not disclose, I once got the chance to meet a Christian big wig in the Hollywood scene. He wasn't a screenplay writer or a movie director or anything like that, but he was the sort of person who's adjunct to those folks. And some people thought I was trying to sell him a screenplay, and I was not. I'm not interested. I'll write books, but I want other people to act on stage and do all that stuff.
You don't want
to
be a playwright? I mean, come on.
I don't. No, if I really wanted to, I probably could learn the form, because, you know, it's got to be formatted differently, and you've got to think a completely different way to direct or write for a stage or a visual performance of some kind. But it's almost like music. When I look at this stuff, I am at an even greater distance than I am when I'm talking about books, because I can make books, but I want other people to make the music. I want other people to make the stage plays. And faithful listeners, I think you're going to really love this episode.
Yeah. I work on the technical production team at my church. And so if I was ever to be involved in a live theater play, I'd probably want to do something similar. I really like bringing all of those different elements together, the lighting, the sound, the visuals. So that would be fun. Now, I may have mentioned this before in the podcast. I'm a theater dad. Two of my kids are in a show right now. They're starting their rehearsals today for their newest show. And so I'm really excited to meet our guest today, because he's doing this professionally. This is something my kids are going to be really intrigued by. You know, a big question we have, Stephen, as a family is, we know that, you know, Hollywood and Broadway, not exactly Christian spheres of entertainment, but we know that there are a lot of Christians in this world. And so I'm really curious to know from a fellow Christian, what is it like to be a performer? What is it like to live in this world of live theater that we have been told many times by many people can be very dark? And it can just be a very challenging place no matter what, even if you're with a lot of other believers. So what does that look like? What is sort of the mission or the purpose of doing that as a Christian? You know, what is the driving philosophy of being a performer professionally? So I can't wait to ask our guests all those questions.
I know that a lot of people who are biblical Christians doing creative arts will say things like, well, you still need to go to Hollywood, you still need to go to Broadway, you need to go to these metropolitan areas that are associated with the big creative arts. And that is one path for Christians who are so-called. But one big emphasis we have at Lorehaven is looking for the folks who are actually putting into practice that thing that Christians tell each other we ought to be doing. Well, if you don't like the darkness, don't just curse the darkness, go light a candle. There's a lot of people who are lighting the candle. candles, but you can't see where they are sometimes. They're off in a non-metropolitan area, but doing amazing work. And so it is our privilege to bring yet another one of these faithful voices onto the show in just a moment. First, however, we have a mission update. You may not hear what you wanted to hear about the Prince Caspian play in the show. In that case, I imagine Jenith Dick, our creative director, designer, I don't know, what's her title? Like Little Mermaid of graphics or something like that. We need to give her an official title, but she does a lot of the Instagram work, the social shares for Lorehaven, and the concept art or the featured art for this episode. She actually got this interview for us. She connected us with the Logos Theater folks, and absolutely fantastic connection there. But she's also been to see the Prince Caspian play. So we will link her article when it's available in the show notes. It should be out, Lord willing, just a couple of days after this episode releases. We do articles like that at Lorehaven when we have something great to say. And we also do reviews of the best Christian-made fantastical novels that we can find every week. Last week was a fantasy called Saints and Monsters. And then this coming week, we will have a review of James R. Hannibal's conclusion to the Light Raider Academy trilogy called Lion Warrior. That should be out in due course at Lorehaven, and you can get those reviews free and also subscribe free to get the notifications, as well as your invitation to the Lorehaven Guild, where we don't just review the books, we actually quest into them. Every month, we have new book quests into the best Christian-made fantastical novels we can find, but that's exclusive at the Lorehaven Guild on Discord, and we will email you that invitation if you subscribe at Lorehaven. You can also hear about great sponsors like Oasis Family Media, which is bringing you today the 1232 dramatic audio podcast. Myth and legend collide across medieval Wales in the year 1232 AD when Flint and Rona Thatcher arrive. They meet a penniless leader, a warrior priest, and a dark sorceress fighting over a shattered kingdom. Oasis Audio would like to present a binge-worthy sci-fi fantasy audio series like no other. 1232, a time-travel medieval fantasy adventure, is now available for streaming on all audio platforms. This immersive audio drama includes a full cast, superb sound design, and an original score perfect for your next road trip. Now, 18 episodes of 1232 are available for streaming everywhere. To find out more, visit audio-epic.com. That is audio-epic.com. You can also see that link in our show notes for this episode 208 at lorehaven.com/podcast. Zach, it's time to go on stage. It's time to light the lights. It's time to face the music. However it goes, it's time for Christian-made fantastical stagecraft as our guest enters our studio. Noah Stratton got poked at by magic while he was waiting for the subway in the DC Metro, and now he's been swept into the Lorehaven studio. He's the executive director of the Academy of Arts Logos Theater, where he takes on many roles both offstage and on. Through the years, Noah has been privileged to portray Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol, a new musical, King Miraz in Prince Caspian, Judah in God Meant It for Good, Professor Bear in Little Women, Miss Tatumnus, Professor Kirk in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and much more. Noah, I'm guessing that bio is limiting your many hats that you have to wear with the Logos Theater, but we're glad you're able to clear some time to enter the studio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be on and join you here.
Yeah, it's great to have you, Noah. This show you did about Joseph sounds really interesting. My two oldest daughters are in musical theater. And we've been, my oldest is a junior in high school. And so we're touring colleges right now. And one of them just did a production of Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, or what is it called? Okay.
The Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Now, I've never seen it because I don't remember whether it's biblically faithful or not. Maybe that's Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
That's the heathen
one. I think it's the same author, isn't it, that wrote both plays? But I don't know. That's at least in my mind. So I'm curious how, if you're familiar with that show, how y'all's production of Joseph is similar or different.
I'm not very familiar with the show. I've heard that it kind of departs a little bit from some biblical integrity. But ours is very much, it's kind of like with all of our productions. That one's a very special one to us. God Meant It for Good. My father-in-law, Dr. Chavers, who founded our ministry in 1971, that was actually his graduate project, his master's graduate project from college. And then he wrote original scoring underneath it. It is an unbelievable production. We're actually very excited because, you know, we're here in DC performing the Prince Caspian right now, but there's plans for that to come back and perform at Museum of the Bible as well, our production of Joseph. And we're very excited for that because that's a near and dear to our hearts to do biblical drama and to do it with integrity, to do it with excellence. My father-in-law would always say, don't think the Bible's boring just because yours has dust on it. A lot of people, I think, may try to add things and put things into biblical dramas many times to try to add some drama. But when you read those stories, my goodness, I mean, we absolutely love that. So that's probably one of the highlights of my life was probably playing that role of Judah. He's one of the main characters along with Joseph, of course. But just telling that story, I mean, it's a real story of pain, of hurt, of family division. I mean, to the point that brothers are literally trying to kill him and then sell him as a slave. I mean, you're talking, this is major, major family division. This is not some little, you know, sibling spat. This is a huge deal. My father-in-law told the story beautifully, just straight from the scripture. So powerful that the incredible character arc of Joseph, of Judah, of Simeon. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So that is probably one of the highlights of the what I've been able to do on the stage. My wife is our artistic director, and she does a brilliant job with directing that and bringing out all the nuances that are there in scripture of that family drama of the huge division and how God takes something that is awful, that is murder, that they're trying to murder him. They're trying, my father-in-law always said, what is your life but influence? And so they were trying to kill Joseph's influence on anybody else by selling him as a slave. So there was murder there that was being sought to be done. And so just absolutely love being able to tell that story, be a part of telling that story on the stage. So definitely one of the highlights is playing Judah in our production of God Meant It for Good.
So just recently I reread the narrative of Joseph going through the Bible in 1 year. It's the latter part of Genesis. Mm-hmm. And love that title, by the way. It comes from the verse where Joseph observes the sovereignty of God, but also the responsibility of man at the same time. What you meant for evil, God meant it for good. And I would apply that truth as well to, believe it or not, the theater, because a lot of Christians shy from the theater. Like even if they go see movies and TV, they view this as like a guilty entertainment pleasure that they keep, you know, barricaded away from their spiritual life. And even back in the days of the Puritans and such, there was this sort of official shunning of the arts because, you know, actors were sleazebags and fiends. And we just want to be all about sobriety and the word of God over here. And here are you all, along with many, many Christian performers in the past and present, who come along and say, okay, we're going to respect the word of God. We're going to make amazing theatrical performances, and we're going to do that for the glory of God, not the glory of man. And the Academy of Arts has its mission of making the Bible come alive in minds and hearts, which includes, but is not limited to, the Logos Theater. I mean, you all have all these original productions, including Prince Caspian, going as we record and as we release right now at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., but this is one of many productions that you all have done. I mentioned some of the titles earlier. You all have also done The Scarlet Pimpernel. My wife and I watched that because it is an original production with a public domain work that is available for streaming. So we were able to rent that from the Logos Theater streaming platform. And you all have a 300-seat auditorium of your own in Taylor's, South Carolina. But then you've also now gone on tour. You all have been at one of my favorite attractions of the Ark Encounter for Horse and His Boy, and now Prince Caspian as well at the Museum of the Bible in D.C., which leads me to chapter one here. We've already talked about some of the biblical plays that you all have done, and then some of the historical or historical fiction plays like The Scarlet Pimpernel, which is like the proto Zorro, who is the proto Batman. So if you're a Batman fan out there, you can think the adventures of a English supposed foppish sort of gentleman who it turns out is actually going over to revolutionary era France and getting the aristocrats away from the guillotine. Bit of a Batman type thing there, because of course he pretends to be a billionaire playboy who would never do that sort of thing, of course, and secret identities and drama and derring do and things. And it's all reflected beautifully in the play as well. So biblical plays, historical plays, but now also fantastical plays.
That's right.
I want to know then how you all then have not moved, because they're still doing the other stuff, but what led to this opportunity of dramatizing 3, going on 4, going on 7 of C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia stories?
It's interesting because you never say, tell God no, right? And that's very important in your life. So someone had suggested to us doing the Chronicles of Narnia series on the stage, 11, 12 years ago. And my wife at first, again, our artistic director, she had at first immediately said, there's no way, right? There's no way. We had seen a number of people try to do things on stage, and you know, there's challenges there. And we had mostly seen things that were pretty low end and fairly cheesy. And then of course you're working with, you're trying to do it justice, right? These are beloved books. These are things people have grown up on. It is their childhood. It is their, and adults. We met so many adults who said reading those books changed our lives. And we've been, personally have been so impacted by reading those books ourselves. And, you know, Nicole had her dad read those to, and my dad read those to us growing up. And they're so close to our hearts. And then you see the films, and the films, of course, have green screen, and you've got camera cuts, and you can do all sorts of magical things with a camera, because I can cut, make something appear, turn the camera back on, and oh, look, magic, something appeared. You can't do that on the stage, right? People are sitting there watching you the entire time. And so all these reasons, we're saying, there's no way, we're not gonna do that. We don't feel like we can do it justice. And then, but the Lord kind of has that way of saying, yeah, never say never, huh? And so it got to a point that as a smaller ministry, we didn't have a ton of marketing dollars. And so we were doing productions, and we're saying, what can we do that already has name recognition? And so someone, again, suggested to us, hey, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, or hey, Prince Caspian, or hey, Chronicles of Narnia. And so that was kind of the start of saying, well, let's try. And our first question was, how can we do Aslan well? He is a depiction and an allegory of Jesus Christ. We would rather not have someone walking out with a fur coat on. We want something big, powerful, majestic, how he's described in the book, a great lion. And so how do we portray that on stage? And that got our creative team going. Nicole was talking with our technical director at the time and saying, can we do something like that? And he came back and he said, I think we can. And so that was also our launch into large scale puppetry for the stage, where we're very blessed now to be, as far as we know, the only Christian company in the world that's making our own. There are several other companies that are making these for Broadway, for different things like that. But as far as we know, we're the only Christian company producing our own at this level. And so we're very, very grateful for that. The puppetry is just stunning. And we keep trying to come up with new ways of pulling these, because most people think of like the hand puppets, right? When you say puppetry, and they're like, oh, you have a lion.
Kermit the Frog here. Right.
That's right. But then they see, a real horse just walked on the stage. We've had so many people think it was a real horse when he comes on, run by 3 people. Aslan is this giant, beautiful lion run by 3 men. And it's just, it's incredible. So never say never to the Lord. He has ways of bringing things back around. And so that started us on that journey of doing the series of the Chronicles of Narnia.
I've watched only the YouTube videos, but I've been so impressed with how big these puppets are. And I see what you're saying about you do need a different name, because there's not just the little, like, you know, wires that you kind of like hold above, or like the little sticks that you kind of drive them with. It's really incredible looking. And yeah, it looks like it takes a big team to kind of pull these off. So, you know, I'm curious, like, you guys are the only Christian production doing this sort of puppetry work. How did you guys get the training or the skills together? Like, how did y'all get started in turn? Like, what's your background, I guess? Was that what y'all had wanted to do, and then you found Narnia, or did you just kind of gather the right people to pull these kinds of productions off?
It's amazing. Our philosophy, we're very big on philosophy, and I think that might be why we've stayed small many times, because we don't do a lot of mainstream things. I mean, C.S. Lewis is more mainstream or more well-known. Philosophy is huge to us. Again, I'm referencing my father-in-law a lot. He was the founder of our ministry and put in a lot of this philosophy, because he wasn't just an actor, you know. He wasn't just, oh, I have this itch that I need to scratch to go get on the stage. And there's all these other people they're Christians and they like being on the stage, so I'll give them something that they can go do on the stage. And so then we'll do all these mainstream things and then just say we're doing it for Jesus and everything's good. Our philosophy goes far deeper than that. And so he would always say ministry implies content. And so content was vastly important to us of what we put on the stage. It means something. It matters. So a lot of what we do is we are always trying to emulate the Creator. We are made in the image of God. Every person is. And so as we're made in His image, we have access to His creativity. We should be the most creative. We should be the most beautiful. We should be the most professional because we're directly connected to the Creator. It's sad that the world sometimes is more honest and truthful with their craft than Christians are. And so many times, and of course, the budgets, you know, the world values these things, I think, for a very important reason, a world-changing, culture-changing reason that they pour money into this and make it so important. But as we're connected directly to the Creator, our technical director had training in puppetry, more small-scale puppetry, loved studying Jim Henson, loved studying all those puppeteering things. And so he had a background in that. And so he was the one who helped kind of get us started in it. But now, you know, very sadly, he's had three major strokes and he's kind of physically very challenged in what he can do now because of those strokes. And so there was a young man that was helping him during the process of building Aslan back about 11 years ago. And that young man really just gave himself over to the Lord. He was sweeping. He was bringing tools over for our technical director at the time, just watching him, just soaking up what he was doing. And when those strokes happened, our technical director said, his name's Justin, to Justin, the younger man, it's your time. You got to take this and run with it. And now Justin, wow, as a guy in his late 20s, has built three full-size horses, has built two full-size bears, has built trees, has built all these different things. And really, we put it back on the Lord. He has sacrificed himself to the Lord. Yes, he studies, he trains, he reads so many things. But he and his team now are making unbelievable things that are shocking the world. We had the people from Warhorse in the UK contact us and say, wait, who did your puppets? And, you know, did someone that worked with us make those for you? We said, no, we made them ourselves. And so just very grateful of that. As we as Christians do the hard work, ask the Lord to give us the help, really honestly look at everything we're doing and seek His favor and His guidance, He leads in beautiful, wonderful ways.
No, this is absolutely fantastic. What you're talking here is my love language, specifically for grounding a philosophy of Christian creativity, not in, well, we must be as good as the world, or we must show people that Christians aren't the bad guys. I mean, all that's very nice, yeah, but I want to foreground that in the doctrine of God as Creator. And not just because Lewis and Tolkien said do, but because the Bible presupposes this. Yes. When we are made in His image, we reflect God's communicable attributes, one of which is this kind of creativity. And of course, Tolkien called it subcreation, and there's a whole niche of study and jargon there. But you all are not just talking about it in books and think pieces. You're going out and doing it. You're getting the foam, you're learning puppetry, you're doing the stage lighting, all of these things. And it's absolutely marvelous to see. And by the way, for those listeners now who are already there, who are like, shut up and take my money, unfortunately, you cannot see Prince Caspian or The Horse and His Boy or The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe performed by the Logos Theater on streaming. It's specifically for the stage. So you got to actually go see it, at least so far. And act fast, by the way, because if you're listening in April, you're going to have to hoof it over to D.C., like our friend Jenneth Dick did, because the show ends on April the 27th. I think she went over there.
She's seen
Prince Caspian. And by the way, she has a whole write-up about it coming up, hopefully this week at lorehaven.com. There's a whole article about it. We'll have some pictures and stuff there. Jenneth got some really great quotes. But the Museum of the Bible shows end on April the 27th. And how many performances are you all doing per week for the next couple of weeks or so?
Yeah, we do 7 a week. So there are a number of chances to still come. So yes, you're right. Like you said, it ends April 27th. So time is ticking. So we perform matinee productions on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So a lot of people that are in Museum of the Bible already can come attend those productions. So those are matinee, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then Friday and Saturday, we have two shows each day, a matinee and 7 p.m. So 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturdays as well. So 7 a week. So a lot of number of chances to come see it. Yes, please make your plans. Just last night, we talked to people that had flew in from Portugal just to see the show, came from the UK to see the show, drove from Florida to see the show. We've had people from Texas, California, Washington State, Illinois. I mean, all over the United States, they're coming in to see this because, like you said, you can't see it anywhere else. And we're really praying that those rights can get released where we could start streaming these. But again, all the video rights are locked up right now with good old Netflix.
We hope it's good. We hope it's good.
Yeah, we're worried about what's coming out from that. But anyway, we can't control that. So just praying a lot about that. But yeah, so they do have to come see it in person right now. Yes.
Well, and there is something so magical about seeing a production in person that you just can't get from either a streaming version of your play or even from the movie, as you said, because, you know, the movies are great. We've talked about them a lot on this podcast, but
the first two are good. The third,
I like them all because I just like,
no, the third is hijacked by humanism and, you know, follow your dream nonsense. And I've not said nearly enough about that, actually.
I'll still take a bad Narnia movie.
The effects were decent.
But there's something so different about seeing it live in person. Because yes, with the movie, you know, like you said, there's all the camera cuts, there's the green screen, there's all these clips that they've basically pieced together. Whereas when you see it live, you're seeing in one take, essentially, the whole story.
That's right.
And, you know, right. I'm a theater dad, and so I get it now. I wasn't really ever into the theater before I had kids, but now I get it because there's sort of this drama of like, as an audience member, right? You're like, are they going to pull it off? Are they going to remember all of those lines, like all of those songs? That seems like a challenging thing to do. And then you're doing it, as you said, every single day, or 7 days a week or seven times a week. And so there is sort of this wonder as a viewer of like, how are they going to do that again tonight? Yep. Like they just did it this morning.
Right.
So yeah, so what really drives you guys to do that just every day?
It drives us because of our mission, you know, making the Bible come alive in minds and hearts through the power of storytelling. It's so much bigger for us than just going up and doing a play. We've said many times, if we just love drama, we probably would have stopped a while ago. You'll burn out. I have a vivid memory of this from college. I was able to be in some larger productions in college. It was a kind of a secular production that the college did, and I was one of the main parts. And I remember taking my bow and walking off stage, and it struck me like a load of bricks. Noah, what was that? And I remember just kind of standing there a second by myself for a moment of like, it's done. The clapping stopped. Was anybody affected? Was anybody changed? Was anybody drawn to something larger and greater about the Lord through that? And I was kind of sitting there thinking, no, no, and no. And at that point, I was like, I think I might be done with being stuff. Okay, someone claps for me. Okay, well, whatever. Like that dies real fast. You know, they'll be clapping for someone else tomorrow. So, okay, who cares? Like the applause doesn't really matter. I appreciate it. People are expressing their thanks. And our view of a curtain call is we're saying thank you back to them for coming. It's not go out and receive your praise. It's out and go out there and give thanks to the audience. That's our view of a curtain call. That really hit me of like, why are we doing what we're doing? Why would I do this every day? And for us, it's we're going out. And again, this goes back to our philosophy. What is preaching? We normally think of preaching. Ah, that's a person on Sunday standing behind a pulpit with a Bible open. Ah, they're preaching. But really, look at the term preaching. Preaching is proclaiming. I'm proclaiming something. Okay, what did Jesus do? Did he stand behind a pulpit and preach all the time? I actually pastor a small church. When I'm back home in South Carolina, my father-in-law was a pastor of a church for 13 years. We care about the local church. We care about preaching behind a pulpit with a Bible, for sure. That's very, very needed. But if I'm going to go act every day on a stage, I've got to have bigger meaning and purpose. And for us, it is preaching. It is proclaiming a truth. And what am I proclaiming? That's why we love the biblical dramas. We love C.S. Lewis because he's preaching. He's teaching, actually, maybe in even more powerful and beautiful ways than most preachers would do on a Sunday morning or Sunday night or whatever, because he's using fantastical, beautiful storytelling. What makes that so powerful for people? Because like you said, in a live play, I'm becoming a part with it. Why do people cry? Why do people laugh? Why do people applaud? I believe they've put themselves in the scene in some way. They've seen themselves in Miraz and his anger and his control and his, I have to make this work. And they've seen some maybe anger of themselves. They've seen some control in themselves that's not good. Maybe they've seen something in Peter as he's trying to lead the four Pevensies and he's leading them all wrong. He's leading them and Lucy saying, no, 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 we got to go follow Aslan. And they say, we don't see him. Hello, faith, right? You don't see, you walk by faith, not by sight. And he's not following. And I see Peter in that. I see where I'm trying to do my own thing and it's not working. I see myself in Lucy. I'm trying to follow, but it doesn't make sense right now. But I've got to trust and keep following. So many preaching points all through this production and all through Lewis's. There's so many. You know, we could talk for the next hour about all the things just in Caspian, about all the preaching that Lewis is doing, but beautifully, subtly, powerfully that he is doing. So that's what keeps us doing it every day, is that we're going out to a brand new audience who's never seen it before. It's their first time. It might be our 52nd time, but it's their first time. So that gives you new energy, new excitement, and not just to go do a show, but to do something that we're praying. We pray before the show. We're praying at intermission. We're praying throughout the production. We're having devotionals backstage with our cast. We're saying we're going out to give a message, and people desperately need this message of hope, of faith, of following, of fighting when it's hard, not giving up, not giving in. Peter goes out there to fight Miraz. Where's Aslan? He should be coming roaring in and saving the day, and he's not here. What's going on? And he has to actually fight Miraz there for a while. All these things, right? All these messages, and could go through so many of them. I am going through a lot of them right now. That's what keeps us going every day. That's what gets us put that costume back on, go sweat out there in the production again, because we're doing it for a much, much higher purpose than we're artists and we're actors and we love doing shows. It like that dries up real fast when you're doing it this many times. So that deeper meaning of we're going out to proclaim a message to people that desperately need it. And we're so grateful because in our backstage passes, when people come backstage, we're hearing it over and over and over again. People are in tears. People are saying, this was healing for me. This was a ministry to my soul. That's the constant theme that we're hearing. And that's what keeps us going every day and keeps us putting the costume back on and going back out there.
Wow. No, there's at least one book in the Bible, as you know, Esther, which is all about the providence of God, but does not actually ever name drop him. And that's one of the famous lines for that is Mordecai telling Queen Esther, who knows but that you have put into the kingdom for such a time as this.
That's right.
I would like to apply that to you guys, because not only do you have this very high view of God's creativity reflected in the Christian's creativity, but also a high view of the local church. I did not know, for example, that you were also pastoring a small church. Blimey. There must be two or three of you clones down there in South Carolina, because I'm not sure how you're doing it right now.
I have some great helpers there. Yeah.
That is wonderful to hear, because it really here is about the doctrine of vocation. Zach and I just talked about this in our last episode, going over some of the ways that Christians can respond with wisdom to critics, including some pastors who seem to be a little jealous of the whole performing arts idea, or who associate it with just ministry pragmatism. You know, well, if people seem to like rock concerts, then let's bring the rock concert into the church. If people like drama, let's bring the drama into the church, and we'll just save the sermon for like a 5-minute homily. And yet you all seem to be putting into practice and understanding this idea that, sure, it's wonderful to build a puppet of Aslan for the stage for God's glory. But if y'all are bringing that thing into the church when I'm supposed to be here for music and fellowship and preaching, I might walk out thinking that's just one of those, you know, performing churches. Keep the performance, yes, but on the stage for the glory of God, and then keep the sermons, the preaching proper, the teaching, the fellowship, the singing, all of that stuff for the institution of the local church. It's not so much that one or the other is better or more spiritual, but that they are different modes of worshiping and teaching and glorifying our Savior.
Yes, and that's actually how our ministry started. Dr. Chavers, and imagine this, in 1971, like Christians have come, I think, have understood a little bit more about the power of the performing arts now and are embracing it a little bit more. In 1971, this was not popular. And he started the ministry of the Academy of Arts, our ministry, going to churches to do productions on their stages.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was unbelievable. That's how our ministry started. Our ministry started as a smaller organization going with a van and trailer with some stage lights, props, makeup, costumes, and going into churches and doing a one-night meeting and setting up, doing a production, and then leaving and going somewhere else. So we still do that to this day. On our summer teams, we recruit young people. It's like a short-term missions trip for them. They raise funds to come. They come travel with us for 9 weeks, going to churches for one-night meetings. I think there's a huge misunderstanding, especially, you know, I'm around pastors, there's a huge misunderstanding of, let me back up. Why are almost 70% of Christian young people leaving the faith? I look at that and I scratch my head and I have to ask why. What's going on? These are Christian young people. They're going to church. They're going to a Christian school, many of them are homeschooled. They have a decent family, probably. Okay, so those are the three main things that people say. If you go to church, you know, if you go to a decent school or homeschool, if you've got a somewhat decent family, you're going to be fine because you'll have the foundation you need. I guess not, because 70% of Christian young people are walking away from the faith. Why is that? I believe it's this. I believe it's media, it is the performing arts, and it is film. People are spending an average of 8 to 12 hours a day on media, YouTube, social media, films, movies. What is that? They have a philosophy pouring into their brains. And then what? I'm going to go to church for 2, 3, 4 hours a week, and I'm going to combat 70 hours of philosophy that's getting put in my brain by, quote unquote, just the arts, just entertainment. And I've heard Christians say that so many times.
Entertainment. It drives me nuts.
I want to pull my hair out because, like, what do you mean it's just entertainment? No, this is not just entertainment. The world is pouring philosophy, a way of thinking. Follow your heart. Do what feels good. Make sin not a big deal. Make it funny. Make it attractive. And the young people, wait. So I go to church for 2 hours, 3 hours a week, and they say, follow God, don't sin, do what's right. Okay, but then I've got 70 hours of philosophy that's really exciting, that's entertaining, that's engaging, pouring into my brain through social media, through the arts, through what I'm seeing on stage, through what I'm seeing in film, and it's all saying the opposite. No wonder we have 70% of young people walking away when they've been in a good church, when they've been in a homeschool group or a Christian school, when they have a decent family. No wonder they're walking away, because of this realm. And that's why we're in it. That's why we're fighting. That's why we go perform every day, because we're fighting for the next generation. We're fighting for this generation. We're saying, Christians, wake up. This medium is destroying your young person. So don't kick it away as it is bad. No, it's not. It's being used in the wrong way by the world. Satan can't create anything. Satan can only take God's good gifts, twist them, and make them into something that will lead in a wrong direction. And that's what he's done with the arts. He's taken the stage, he's taken the film, and he's made something beautiful and enticing and creative and wonderful, but that is putting in wrong philosophy, where kids are laughing at sin, thinking it's fun, thinking it's not a big deal, and no wonder they walk off and join the world when they get to their college and young adult days, because they've been programmed literally their whole life by all the pastors and all the parents saying, oh, that's just entertainment. That doesn't matter. What you do on the stage doesn't really matter. What you do on the film doesn't really matter. Yeah, it does. It's actually taking your young person away from God. It's a huge deal. So that's a big, as you can tell, a big passion for us, big philosophy reason of why we do what we do.
Noah, this would be a perfect time for me to pitch for a sponsor break, the book I co-wrote called The Pop Culture Parent, but our sponsor is actually a Christian author of fantasy, actually science fiction. So we've got fantasy on the stage covered. We got sci-fi covered here. Lorehaven explores all these kinds of stories and wants to promote the faithful Christians who are making them, including Liam Corley, with his debut science fiction novel, Changelings Insurgents, in which Commander Tauron didn't travel from the 26th century to kidnap a forgotten healer, but he will if that's what it takes to save his mutant son. To end the war between humans and their mutant offspring, Tauron recruits a criminal, a scientist, and a scholar to search for genes that will purge the mutation. But trusting each other turns out to be the real fight. In Changelings Insurgents, a sci-fi novel, first one out from Liam Corley, published by Millspeak Books, and it is available now wherever fine books are sold. You can see all that info in our show notes for episode 208 or go to lorehaven.com/podcast. Mutations. That's what the devil is doing when he takes a good gift that God has given us, that imagination gift, that creative spark, that way to reflect his image and his creativity. And then the devil makes it a mutant form to promote sin and vice and all these terrible things. And so it is Christians who are not just writing about this, talking about this, going on and on about it at church, but actually going out and doing the theatrical arts and doing them with excellence and apparently impressing even the guys who made the War Horse play, which I think we all saw the pictures, even if we didn't see the play, Noah, where they actually brought this, you know, giant life-size puppet horse out. You know, it's not like it's covered in fur, like you can kind of see the inner working parts of it, if I remember right. And then you can actually see the puppeteers alongside it, but you don't care because the horse is so lifelike. And by that point, you're so immersed in the drama that you don't notice the puppeteers right there beside the horse. They just sort of blend, which leads me to more questions about making Prince Caspian. And I suppose also the horse and his boy, and then going back further, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. But Prince Caspian is now, and it's got horses and creatures and moving trees and all of these things. And yet the horse and his boy also had, you know, obviously Bree and Huynh, the talking horses. So just a quick recap based on what I read, and please correct me if I get something wrong here, but Logos Theater started off with an adaptation of an existing Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe script. Did I read that right?
Yeah, so we were actually nominated to go over to the Fringe Festival, and so we were able to do the European script over there, and was able to do that there. It was very well received, and we actually loved, we got to walk Aslan up the Royal Mile there in Scotland, and we had all these people leaving what they were doing and following Aslan. It was a beautiful picture.
That is so Narnian.
it was awesome. It was just awesome. So very, very grateful for that. And yeah, that was the first time that we did the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, yes.
And then you all did The Horse and His Boy. I remember reading so much about that and seeing the video clips. And then that was the one that actually exhibited for a while at Ark Encounter. They must have built some new stuff at Ark Encounter since I was there. We've had Tim Chafee, their creative director, on this show a few times. And so here comes some other creative directors, you know, not just performing a play about creation, evolution, or Noah, but performing The Horse and His Boy, which I think is just marvelous. And it helps to elevate the importance of Lewis's world and the whole idea of fantastical storytelling, something a little bit more like the Book of Esther. Where even though Aslan is there, you know, as a supposal of Jesus, you know, Jesus himself, if he were active in a fantasy world, but, you know, Christianity isn't named other than, you know, a few references to Bible here and there. And yet the stories are just saturated in Christianity. Lewis using these images and the form that he adapted them to in order to sneak past the watchful dragons. And yes, be of some use as a Christian citizen to children and grownups, of course. And then we've got Prince Caspian as well. That's the one that's on stage now. And it's even been praised by Douglas Gresham, the famous stepson of C.S. Lewis. He actually has The Horse and His Boy, the book, dedicated to him and to his brother. So if you open it up before chapter one, there's his name right there. And then he's the narrator of the Focus on the Family Radio Theater versions. He has some cameos in the Disney Walden movies. And he also has cameoed in the behind-the-scenes videos there. What has his response been to Prince Caspian, the Horse and His Boy? And what kind of a boon was that to you all?
Yeah, that was just a wonderful, beautiful partnership we were able to create. When we first, so we had done that Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe there in Scotland. And then a lot of people were asking, like, well, hey, do the next one. So we were looking, and my wife was looking and could not find a script for Prince Caspian. And so we contacted the C.S. Lewis company and said, do you have a script? And they said, no, we don't. You would be doing a world premiere if you did that on a professional level of Prince Caspian. And so she took the book and adapted it for stage and sent it off to them. And she was going back and forth on a few things with one of the people there. And then all of a sudden she got an email back and it said Douglas Gresham at the top. And she was like, is this the real Douglas Gresham? And she actually got to work directly with him to vet that script. And he absolutely loved it. He gave just a few little suggestions, but overall absolutely loved the script. And then he kind of kept hinting at things in his correspondence and his emails. And Nicole was saying to me, like, I think he wants to come over because he lives in the island of Malta. And had said, "What he said, well, I've never missed a world premiere in my life, you know." And so we're like, "I think he might want to come." And so she said, "Should I ask him?" And I said, "Of course. All I can say is no." And so we asked him, and he said, "Oh, I'd love to." And so we actually were able to fly him over. He got to be there for opening night at our premiere in Taylor, South Carolina, at our home base. It was just awesome. And then he was there for almost a week and got to do some promotion for us and do all sorts of things. He got to see the opening weekend shows, which were just were fantastic. He said it was the best opening night he'd seen in 30 years. So he was so kind and so amazing in that. And then Horse and His Boy was next. Same thing. There was no script. Nicole adapted it, worked directly with Douglas Gresham again. He loved it. He barely made any changes. He didn't make any changes at all, I don't think. He just loved it so much. And he gave us a huge compliment. He said if he would have had Nicole's script for Prince Caspian earlier, he probably would have used that for the film script for the Disney Walden project.
Well, it's a great improvement that Susan doesn't kiss Caspian at the end. I will go ahead and say that.
Yeah. They love to put in their little things, don't they? Add something in. So you'll see the actual story if you come see our productions. It's almost verbatim from the book. We're, again, very much purists in that. We want the author to sit on the front row and say, "That's my story," and not be like, "Wait, what's that part? What are you saying there? What was that?"
Wow. So that's the way to do it.
So he's been a wonderful friend. And The Horse and His Boy was a little more scary, like you said, because it was dedicated to him. And so we're thinking he's going to come watch what was dedicated. Anyway, he absolutely loved it. And it was a wonderful partnership.
So my oldest daughter is really curious how you guys adapted that and what were some of the challenges. You know, you've talked about the puppetry, but we were looking at the production photos last night. She's like, "How did they make these trees?" So that's like, and then it looked like they're in the air or something, and or on these stilts. We're like, "How? What is going on there?" So can you talk about that?
Yeah. So the trees, there's a couple. There's some that are walking on stilts, and they've got these backpacks that kind of cover them and come up all over top of them that make them look much taller than they are. There's a giant tree that the guys built that actually his face is right about the chest, and on top of him is the head way above. He's about 13 feet tall, and he's walking around on stage. Just unbelievable. And there are some trees that also fly. So we use rigging where they actually connect. Wow. And they have big, long, you know, costumes that go all the way to the floor when they're raised up. So there's a couple different tree versions that we use for our on stage. Yes.
That's incredible. And I want to ask too about the music. We'll probably go back and forth on this, just talking about Prince Caspian in particular. But even though you, faithful listener, cannot watch Prince Caspian on streaming, you can listen to the music for a lot of these productions, including a single that was released. I guess it's part of the Prince Caspian soundtrack. I've listened to that about 3 times because I can tell a lot about a production and its faithfulness if you listen to the music. And if you have kind of the equivalent here of an end credit song, and I can tell like by listening, like, oh, this song is capturing the heart of the story. It's not just the song that runs under the credits and it's completely random or, you know, sneaking in some humanism there. Like, oh, you're a king and queen if you believe that was the Don Treader end credit song. Blech, enough said. Y'all's credit song or y'all's song here, Look for the Morning, is marvelous. It really captures the heart of the story. Without pulling out so many of the messages of Prince Caspian, it's just very organic. And I can't praise the music enough. And I would love to at least hear the music from this show. How do you all do those orchestrations, particularly, you know, as a smallish ministry, though, but that acts very big? Like, how does the music get developed?
Yeah, that's Olivia Singleton, our director of music. She just, Nicole, my wife again, had done some brainstorming with her and said, "Man, we probably need to get like a single or something that could play with the they could play at the end. We want something that people can walk away with and continue to muse and to meditate on what they've done. And so this would be great to have something kind of like from Aslan's perspective of that, what he's saying, and hold on, look for the morning. I'm coming again. Though the battle's raging around you, hold on, I'm coming." And what Christians, you know, we need that, right? When you look around at the world, it's pretty dark. It seems there's a lot of despair, a lot of bad things going on. It seems like evil's triumphing in a lot of ways. But, you know, just keep fighting, keep trusting, keep looking to Christ. And so that was kind of how that song was born. And it's based actually even farther back off of my father-in-law was a brilliant songwriter. He wrote over 200 pieces of original music. He did everything. He was unbelievable. An actor, director, preacher, philosopher, music writer. He did everything. It was amazing. So he had actually written a song that the nurse sings to young Caspian in the production. And so Olivia, our director of music now, kind of took that song, took some things from it, and then wrote that. So, and then we were able to make a connection with a wonderful Christian man in Nashville who does who does a lot of the orchestrations for us, and we're able to get those things recorded there. So, just blessed. It's by faith. Again, we don't have huge budgets. We don't have, but we just ask the Lord, say, well, this needs to be the top line. Please help us. And Lord brings connections, brings people. It's just amazing to see him at work.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so Caspian's nurse sings to him. What a wonderful extra book detail that is in perfect keeping with the theme of the story. I read also, I think it was Jenneth who said that there is an expanded role for Caspian's nurse in this version of the story. Can you go on some of those, talk some about some of those adaptations that are based in the book, but that kind of enlarge an element that may be a little bit more to the margins in the original story?
Yeah, so Nicole had that idea based off of Lewis. You know, his mother was a huge impact on his life. And so she developed that nurse character just a little bit so that as a young person who's the nurse is taken away and kind of ripped out of his life, and that's where Dr. Cornelius comes in. The impact she would have had of telling him these stories about old Narnia and kind of getting that foundation laid in his life that Dr. Cornelius builds on and fully develops with him. To then fully love Narnia in Caspian's mind. And so really kind of referencing back to C.S. Lewis's love of his mother and the impact she was on his life. And so, and then she brings that nurse back just very briefly to connect again with Caspian at the very end. Also, it's a beautiful finishing moment there. That's wonderful to see. Aslan, you know, heals her as well in the scene, I'm forgetting exactly which scene that comes in the order. But anyway, so it's a beautiful character that's kind of referencing back to Lewis himself.
I love that scene from the book. It's where Aslan, I knew it was true. Have you come to take me? And then Aslan says, yes, dear, but not the long journey yet. Every time I read the book or hear the audio drama, I just get chills.
That's right. It's a beautiful moment in the play as well. It's beautiful.
Well, I'd love to ask more about the making of Prince Caspian, but I do need to hasten along. But you, faithful listener, can read Jenneth's article going into more of the behind the scenes of the stagecraft there. Let's stop by our third sponsor, which is Story Embers. They have a conference coming up here in May. The exact dates I'll have in just a moment. They are an institution that helps train Christian writers. For example, if you're getting the screenwriting or stage writing bug here, maybe this is something you'd want to benefit from. If you're a Christian writer looking for training that enriches you both as a writer and as a Christian, if so, the 2024 Story Embers Summit will help you discover how your faith intersects with your writing life when you're struggling over a scene in your manuscript. Your faith doesn't need to be on the sidelines of your writing journey. Authors like Sarah Ella, Stephen James, Carla Hawk, and Thomas Umstead Jr. are coming together to tackle the tough issues Christian writers wrestle with. The summit will help you grow your confidence through thought-provoking sessions, small group discussions over Zoom, and even a query letter workshop. You can learn more about the 2024 Story Embers Summit and how the speakers can help you blend your faith and writing craft more effectively by visiting storyembers.org/summit. That is storyembers.org/summit. It'll be hosted from May 23rd through 25th of this year, 2024. Registration is open now. And you can get more info in our show notes for episode 208 or go to lorehaven.com/podcast. All right, Noah, this is where we ask you to drop some big old spoilers. Chapter 3, which stories are next for Logos Theater Stages? I did want to touch on, you keep mentioning Dr. Nikki Chavers, one of these unsung heroes, the founder of the Academy of the Arts way back in 1971. And then I guess 50 years later, he passed, I believe, in 2021. That's correct?
Yes, he did. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you all have the foresight for him, for he is the voice of Aslan, to record lines for all 7 Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes.
What a renaissance man. I look forward to meeting him someday. Yeah. But it sounds like then you all at the Logos Theater are going to be in Narnia for the long haul. How much can you say about the Silver Chair? And I mean, y'all have already adapted The Horse and His Boy, which has never seen even a BBC television adaptation. But if y'all keep going, like, you're going to face the last battle and everything. Yes. Like, any early thoughts without dropping spoilers or giving premature dates about how that process is going?
Yeah, we love all the books. I think people ask us many times, which one is your favorite one to perform or to produce or things like that. And it's interesting. They asked Douglas Gresham that several times when he was with us. What's your favorite book? And he gave an answer that I felt like was cheating a little bit. He said, whichever one I'm currently reading. And I thought, well, come on now. He's got to pick one. But that's what he said. And I thought, But then people have asked us that. And now I find myself giving that same answer, whichever one I think we're currently performing, because they're so brilliant. And each one is so unique in its messaging. But our goal, yes, is to do all seven. And we love, The Last Battle, we feel like we're living that right now with our culture, with the philosophies that are going on, with the way things are being twisted, with ways there are no definitions anymore, right? What is a woman? What is a man? I mean, we're questioning everything. I mean, this is the last battle stuff.
Tash is Aslan. Aslan is Tash. They're the same.
That's right. Exactly right. So we kind of want to skip to that one, but we know we're probably going to go a little more in order, but we're checking several things. So we actually have two different ones that are kind of in the works right now. Our goal is to potentially, again, we're working through some details right now to potentially bring The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe back and do a full scale here in the United States. Very, very excited for that. And then Nicole's also been working on scripts of actually two other ones. So we're kind of just seeing which one might be best to do next. But yeah, the goal is to eventually do all seven. And big vision is to have a full scale theater that could be doing Narnia productions year round. And a C.S. Lewis theater. We actually already got permission from that, from the C.S. Lewis company, to build that. Of course, we need $1 million to be able to do that. Quite a lot, but we'll see. The Lord's already doing some really good things. We've made some wonderful connections. There's a great excitement for this. There's a need for it. It would be worldwide known because there's nothing else like it right now. So we've got big vision. So we'll see what God does with all of that. But yes, goal is to do all seven productions.
Isn't that amazing, though? I mean, because we, if you've been around theater at all, you know about the Globe Theater, these places where there's always Shakespeare happening. But it is kind of amazing that there is nowhere yet where there's always Narnia happening. So I'm excited for that. And very selfishly, I want to know when auditions go up, because I have some children that may want, or maybe even a wife that may want to audition.
You guys are going to have to move to Branson or whatever it's going to be.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So there are other places that we're looking at potentially building. Taylor's is a great spot, but need a little more space. So our current location, home base, is a wonderful home base for training, but definitely wouldn't have the capacity that we need to do all that.
Well, may the Lord increase what you all are doing. And for all you big donors out there among our faithful listenership, $1 million. I'm sure that was the official figure, and there's no chance of that ever ballooning in an inflation economy. I am sure, though, however, that God has you all exactly where he wants you. Not just doing Narnia plays, of course, but you all already have your schedule laid out. It's up your website, thelogostheater.org. Can you tell me a little bit about the plays y'all have coming up in 2024 and 2025 before we send you back to the train station?
Yeah, very good. There are several, yes, coming up on our calendar at our home base in Taylor, South Carolina. We'll have a number of great shows coming. We'll be working also with our master's program. We have a college program. So there's master's students that will be doing some of their productions. So those they'll be doing wonderful productions that the public will want to come see. So those are some of those that are on the schedule also at the Logos Theater there in Taylor's. And then we're going to be continuing to tour with our larger Narnia productions and things like that. So please be looking for a theater near you. Hopefully it's coming pretty soon as the touring also continues with the large scale productions.
Fantastic. And yes, Logos Theater. I don't know why I want to keep saying Logos. That ain't how you pronounce it.
Well, it's all right, because we've kind of cheated. The Greek term is Logos or Logos. So we've kind of married the two, Logos.
For our theater. Yeah. That works. And a wonderful tribute, by the way, to John chapter 1 there. You know, A lot of Christians like talking about Jesus as the Word, but words do describe images, and you know, Jesus is revealing the glory of God, the light of God that's coming to the world. Words are about images, and vice versa. Well, bless you all. I really look forward to seeing one of these Narnia plays and the other ones. But of course, there's lots of streaming shows already existing that you can go watch. Lacey and I did that with the Scarlet Pimpernel. So we'll have all those links in the show notes. And then Noah, I guess the train station awaits. And then beyond that, the stage. I didn't even ask you too much. You are playing King Miraz, which has got to be a very interesting choice there. But I look forward to having you back. Maybe get your wife on too sometime if you all ever have it clear in your schedule. But I appreciate you making the time for us this morning. And just Godspeed to you all as you head back into Narnia even today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Stephen. Thank you, Zach. Appreciate this opportunity. Yeah, it's Miraz, I look a good bit different. They put big tattoos on my face and all sorts of makeup, and actually have a ponytail. They put all sorts of great stuff. So anyway,
I'm gonna look for that in the photos you've sent. That's fantastic.
Some people don't even recognize us, but that's part of it, right? Just playing that part. But it's a great part to play, because I love playing the evil character in that way to show good triumphing over the evil. Yeah. So it's a great opportunity.
Well, God bless, and go break a leg.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Stephen, I'm really challenged by what Noah said about how the world values media so much more than the church does, and how, you know, it's kind of staggering to think about young people spending 8 to 12 hours a day with all different kinds of media. And that is the need and the calling or the urgency that we have as Christians to produce our own best stories for our own people. And so I love that they are doing that. I'm so excited that there will one day be a C.S. Lewis theater where you can go see all of the Narnia shows. Like, I just can't imagine that. That is so cool.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah. And I also love what he said about when you watch these stories, especially live in person, you can see yourself in that story, and how he is King Miraz. You know, that invites people in to look at their own villainy, their own sin tendencies that could turn oneself into a villain like that. We've talked a lot about villains on this podcast. I've written several articles about it. And I think that is so powerful to see that portrayal of that inner sin becoming this external, very famous character. So I'm so pumped for them. I wish them all the best. And, you know, to you, our listener, we want to hear from you. Like, what are your favorite stories to see on stage? When will you go see the Chronicles of Narnia on stage? So send us a note about that at podcast@lorehaven.com. Or if you have seen one of these shows, we'd love to hear more about it. Now let's turn to the comm station and hear from a listener who listened to a previous episode, 207, Should We Get Mad When Christians Scorn Fantastical Fiction? And this was an email sent to us by Cody. And he says, quote, here's a quote from Shakespeare that kind of relates to this topic. For not so vile that on the earth doth live, but to the earth some special good doth give, nor aught so good but strained from that fair use, revolts from true birth, stumbling on abuse. End quote.
Wow. That's good.
Very poetic and very deep. I am going to pretend I completely understand the meaning of that and where that's from. I did take a Shakespeare class in high school and then again in college, and I actually have the entire works of Shakespeare here on my bookshelf. But that is really cool, and I think that's exactly right. We talk a lot about the importance of separating the abuse of a thing from the purpose of a thing. And I think that quote really nails that.
I'd like to try that quote in my best faux Shakespearean and, in other words, completely botch it. Because as I mentioned at the top of the show, I have no theatrical aspirations. Nonetheless, here I go.
For not so vile that on the earth doth live, but to the earth some special good doth give, nor aught so good, but strained from that fair use, revolts from true birth, stumbling on abuse.
There we go.
Yeah, pretty good.
It's just brought to life. You know, sometimes Shakespeare is hard to understand while you're reading it, but you just need a trained thespian to illustrate it on stage so that the communications barrier is breached.
Yeah, it doesn't quite hit the same with my Texan accent, so I liked your accent a
little
bit.
At least you have the complete works of William Shakespeare and have taken at least one William Shakespeare course. I have seen a Romeo and Juliet play here and there on streaming, but that's about as far as it goes for me. Some people go further, though, and debate art and Jesus pictures and things like that. And by the way, after our last episode 206 about Jesus pictures, we've had a rollicking good discussion in the Lorehaven Guild about that forum against them. The discussion continues even when it's not Easter. So if you haven't joined the Guild, now is a great time to get in there and have a wonderfully friendly debate. It is a curated community. But when those friendly disagreements come out, you know, we're going to roll with them. There's different Christians from different denominations in there, different views on art and all that. So in Christ, I think we can discuss those and come to some answers even before Jesus gets back for us to look at him for real and resolve all of these discussions. Speaking of the future, next on Fantastical Truth, I'm guessing that you, faithful listener, are like a lot of us. You come here looking for good Christian-made fantastical fiction, and yet we bring in this mythology, I think, that most Christian fiction so labeled is just bad. And it's not creatively excellent, and they're always leading you to the altar call, and they just want to get you saved, and all of those mythologies can lead one to be rather snarky, even if the best stories have moved on from that. So how do we as fans guard against that temptation towards cynicism about Christian-made fiction, especially if those assumptions are out of date? While you're looking for good books, keep an eye open for great plays. Seemingly, I've just become aware of the Logos Theater, the Sight and Sounds Productions. There's Max McLean's gang out there doing things. There's all kinds of amazing Christian creators. Maybe they're not super popular. Maybe they're not on the New York Times bestseller list or the most popular stage show on Broadway. And yet they're still glorifying God through excellence, not just to entertain, not just entertainment, but in order to reflect the glories and truths and beauties of our Creator. So keep an eye out. You never know when you may find your next favorite story, whether on the shelf or on the stage, as we continue to seek and find his fantastical truth.